Yes, we have a special show for you today, beer drinkers. I talk with none other than Drew Poole, co-owner of Wren House Brewing, in Beer Convo number 4. We talk about everything from me going visiting Wren House for the very first time, being a noob in the Valley of the Sun, and we talk about him, his brewery winning medals for their beers, most recently, the Spellbinder. And we talk about everything about Wren House, how they started, how they got their name, them expanding up into Prescott, Arizona, and maybe a little slight projection on the future of Wren House. We'll see. You know, who knows what the future holds? Who knew the fucking pandemic was going to happen, right? And we talk about a lot of stuff. With Drew, he was open and honest, and I really appreciated that about him. And so I hope you enjoy our conversation. All right, I won't hold it up two more. I got to drop in the plugs real quick because that's what we do here. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Untappd. Search Cold Brew Podcast. Also on Twitter, every once in a while, maybe every 3 months, I get on Twitter, but Instagram. And you can also email us, coldbrewpodcast@gmail.com, for all your cold brew needs. All right, so without further ado, here is Drew and I talking about beer. Set up here and I'm trying to figure stuff out. I got a new mixing board and it's fun, but it's very complicated. They got computers now and touch screens and everything inside the mixing board. It's wild.
Nice.
So thanks for coming on, man. I've been a fan of Wren House since day one.
Yeah.
I'm talking about since I moved to Arizona. So I told the story plenty of times. My listeners probably get sick of it, but I'm going to say it again because I have Drew here. I have to tell you. I moved here in 2016, and I didn't know where I was going to live. So before I started work, I came out here like a couple weeks before to find a place, apartment. And so I stayed at an Airbnb, and of course, first thing I do is closest brewery to me, and it was Wren House. Yeah. Nice. And so I'm like, okay, well, let's check this place. So I get there, and it's unlike any other tap room I've ever seen. It's like an old house. It's all converted. It was really cool. I love the aesthetic inside. And I think Hilda was the one who helped me. I ended up meeting her eventually and learning her name and all that. But I really loved the Jomax. That was my beer.
Nice.
And so the very first Arizona brewery I ever visited was Wren House. And so the fact that you guys are killing it now, kind of makes me feel even better about that.
Yeah, where did you move from?
California, from the Bay Area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Nice. So hold on, in fact, I just stopped that ground control and re-up for the weekend, and I'm opening up your It's All Music.
Okay.
It's an IPA. Nice. What can you tell me about It's All Music?
So It's All Music, I mean, it's almost like a West Coast juicy version of Spellbinder. So
oh, okay.
Spellbinder's, it uses very similar hops, very similar malt. It's just basically the West Coast juicy version of Spellbinder.
Oh, okay. That's really good. Nice and crisp.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me about Wren House. Like, how did it start? Like, what was your, were you a home brewer before? What were you doing before Wren House?
Yeah, well, I'm not personally, but going way back. So we started probably actually talking about building a brewery like nine years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, basically at a point in my life where I was deciding what I wanted to do. So I basically was, I think at the time I was actually working at Kinko's, and, I was talking to my wife and deciding, what I wanted to do with my life. So I was deciding between business school and brewing school. So I applied to UC Davis and I got in there and we were like, yeah, I mean, that would be awesome. But let's see what happens with business school. So anyways, long story short, I got into business school and always thought that one way or another, I would work back around and start a brewery one day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, fast forward, I'm working at Intel, living in Portland. We got to know some local brewery owners up there. They've since closed, but like Alameda and Burnside and places like that, where they had these really cool little 10 barrel neighborhood tap rooms and breweries, and they were super successful. I really dug the vibe and they made great beers. So I was like, you know, being a Phoenix native, I'm like, man, if we could just take one of those and drop it in the middle of Phoenix, that would be amazing. So I told my friend Bill at the time, you know, hey, I'm going to, you know, go do this. I'm going to go start a brewery. Do you want in? So Bill and I started, and then Preston, our head brewer, grew up with my wife Colby in Phoenix. And we asked him, you know, if he was interested. He was working at Big Sky in Montana. Doing, you know, they do 24-hour shifts there, basically.
Yeah, moose drool.
Night. So moose drool, yeah. So we talked to him for, you know, months and months, and you know, got some SBA loans and found a cool spot, and yeah, got opens, and kind of the rest is history.
So you were an Aggie?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you went to UC Davis. I thought you were an Aggie.
No, so I didn't actually go.
To
UC Davis.
All right.
So I ended up at Thunderbird here for business school.
Oh, okay. That would have been the brewery school, though, UC Davis, with Professor Foam or whatever his name is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that would be UC Davis. Yeah, the Aggies.
Oh, okay. And so then you ended up going to Intel. What did you do at Intel?
So I still work at Intel.
Oh, do you really?
So I've kind of worked my way up a little bit. So I started as... because I always bore people when I tell them about Intel. I started as a product marketing engineer and worked on like embedded IoT processors. And then I manage one of our global partner programs at Intel.
Oh, wow. So it's something that you love. Otherwise, you would have stopped, right? And just dove into Renthouse.
Yeah, it's very mentally stimulating is what everybody likes to say. So it's very like, yeah, it's very complex.
Cerebral.
Yeah, so it's it also covers a lot of bills and that sort of thing while we're still, you know, getting the brewery up and running. So
right,
you know, it's nice to have to, you know, pull out a big salary out of the brewery and use that for other things.
So you guys won some awards like in the last two or three years for Big Spills and Valley Beer, and now Spellbinder was the big one. Mm-hmm. I consider it the big one just because it was in the category with the most entries, right? The IPA. Right,
yeah. So we were chasing awards for a little while. I think we definitely want to, you know, bring that national recognition to Phoenix and to our brewery in particular. So we try really, really hard, like all brewers do, in winning awards. So GABF is obviously the biggest, you know, that and World Beer Cup, which ironically hasn't really been happening the last couple of years with COVID and everything like that. But GABF, we won for Valley Beer in 2019. We won a silver for American Lager, which, you know, for us is almost more exciting than Spellbinder in a sense, because it's a very clean, hard style to make. Right. And the guys that usually win that category are like PBR and Coors and places like that.
Yeah. I think Coors won a couple years ago.
Yeah. So we're super excited about that. And then Spellbinder obviously was a hazy IPA last year, and we sold, which was awesome. I think there were, I want to say there were over 500 entries. So it was, it was pretty awesome and shocking to win. So that was pretty sweet.
Now, when you go and you try to make award-winning beer, is it like something that you fine-tune until you get one, or you just think, hey, this one's really good, maybe we should enter it?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. It's a little bit of both. So take like Black Caddis as an example. So we love Black Caddis. on paper, it's probably not super true to style, because we use a lot of chocolate malt and chocolate rye, and it has like a nice kind of coffee roasty character, which would fit in like a robust porter, but you know, Black Caddis is a little higher in alcohol, so it doesn't really fit. So you take a beer like that, and either you decide, hey, we're going to tweak this to fit the style on paper for GABF, or we're going to enter it into a different category. We're going to enter it into a brown, or we're going to enter it into a American stout or something like that, where you think the beer would do well in. So that's kind of part of the strategy. And we do that with all of our beers. So like, even like Valley Beer or Big Spill, you could enter them into different lager categories depending on what you think it fits.
So GABF, you have to submit like a ingredient or like a recipe so it could fit into the categories, or is it just whatever you want to put it into?
Yeah, so you basically choose your category, and then they'll ask you a description of the beer. You don't necessarily have to list your full ingredients, but just highlight things that when the taster is drinking it that they can refer to, but it's just super high level. Usually those are important, the descriptors, especially if you enter into like a adjunct stout category or a coffee stout. Like, they want to know what kind of coffee you used, how did you add it, right? Or if you entered a barrel age category, they'll want to know what kind of barrels and how long you aged it.
How hands-on are you in the brewing process? Do you, are you helping Preston, or are you just going every once in a while? Like, what's your role at Rent House? Are you more the marketing guy, the business guy? What do you do?
Yeah, so it's kind of changed over time. I'm definitely, I find my expertise or the area I like to add to the business in sales, marketing, and like customer service sort of thing. And that's kind of like my area. We have a great brew team, right? So we have, you know, Luke and Preston and Akil. We're bringing on some other folks too in the next couple of weeks, which we're super excited about. So I don't really get involved other than if there's manual labor needed, like, you know, raking out or doing something like that. Or I annoy the brewers all the time with kind of new styles that, you know, I enjoy drinking or I want them to make or something. So I usually, you know, beg them or annoy them until they make it. So
how many of these names have you come up with personally, the names for the beers?
I think we all come up with quite a few. I've done quite a few. I work really closely with Lauren, Preston's wife, our designer, on our design and our labels. So like if we come out with a beer, I'll kind of send her some inspiration of what I think it should look like, and then she does her magic and makes something amazing. And I usually nitpick and make little changes, but I get involved a lot in the naming and the design side of it.
I do like the labels. They're intricate but yet soothing. I don't know if that's the right terminology, but that's labels,
they're very pleasant to look at. They're not like offensive or crazy. They're very like aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, you know, not to call them out, but you look at a can like Drekker, and it's just bam, right in your face, you know?
Right. Which, yeah, everyone has their own unique style for sure, but I think Rent House definitely has a unique style.
How did you guys come up with the name Rent House Brewing anyway? That's it reminds me of like, you know, Wren is a bird, and then the house for the wren.
Right. Yeah. We had a different name actually when we opened, so we were Westward Brewing Company. And like a month before opening, we got a cease and desist from Westward Whiskey. So if you ever Portland, Oregon, you can actually buy it now on the shelves here. But Westward Whiskey was a big, it had just started and they had just filed the trademark. Anyways, we had to switch names. So, you know, we wanted something that was, you know, kind of tipped our hat to Arizona. That's why we chose Westward in the beginning, because it was Westward Ho, like the famous building downtown. But anyways, Wren House, Cactus Wren is a state bird, so it's basically the Cactus Wren. And then I geek out on like old European like mythology and stuff. So anyways, the bird, the reason he has a crown on, there's like this old folk tale about wrens being the king of birds. So anyways, he's got a crown on his head, and then Wren House, it was kind of fitting with our location.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. Why is he holding one foot up though? Is that a Ren pose or something?
No, it's just like an action. I don't know.
To make it more dynamic.
yeah, that Lauren.
No, I like it. You know, I don't see it too. I would like a shirt with just that.
Just the bird.
Just the bird with the crown looking off to the left with the foot. Why not? That's fucking awesome. Maybe a small, yeah. You know, like Ren house underneath, but just that bird right there.
Yeah, we add them to a lot of our shirts, like on the back and stuff.
Nah, I just want one, just big old Ren on the front.
All right. Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah, So you guys just opened a production plant in Prescott Valley or Prescott?
Prescott.
Okay.
Yeah. It's at the airport, actually, at Prescott Airport. So okay. It's we can see Superstition from our patio.
All right.
Superstition. We can see him from our back. Yeah, so we're like right next door.
Now, how big is that? Is that barrel house? I mean, not the barrel house, but the brew house. Like, how much can you produce?
Yeah, so it's a 30-barrel, 3-vessel system, and we can. I mean, we got a bunch of fermenters in there, but I think on paper we can do about 10,000 barrels a year out of there.
All right.
I think. This year, realistically, we'll probably get to like 5 or 6 thousand out of there, which is still 3x what we were doing at 24th Street.
Yeah, and that means we'll be able to get Spellbinder a lot more easier, right?
Right. Yeah. So we just started distributing to like Sprouts, Whole Foods, Total mm-hmm. Wine, BevMo is going to be picking us up. So yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of places you can go find it.
That's awesome. That's the one thing I thought when I first heard you guys were getting that is they're going to start distributing. Because before it was just you have like maybe what Kings or Crap Beer Hop Stop or Ground Control. But now it's like you get into the larger chains and that's when you start being able. Now, you said you can brew up to 10,000 barrels, but you're maybe getting about 5. Is that something you incremental growth, or is it just because of COVID and all that?
I think it's probably just kind of our style. We're more kind of like slow and steady organic growth. So we could theoretically sign up with Safeway tomorrow and mm-hmm. be brewing, you know, max out our system, or go sell to Costco and go hire a bunch of brewers and just, you know, make that facility run 24/7. But I think we'd like to just, you know, grow organically, right? So just do slow growth, where even 5,000 is still a lot of beer for us for mm-hmm. Renthouse, and a huge change going from, you know, taproom only sort of releases to now, you know, brewing Spellbinder like every 3 days, which is crazy, but that's what we're doing. We're brewing Spellbinder like every 3 days up there. So, so it's still a lot. So yeah, we just want to like feel it out. And I think next year we'll probably do like 7,500, or depending on, you know, how it's going, we might even, you know, try to hit 10 next year. So we'll just see. But yeah, we're just kind of, you know, figuring out the system and, you know, what, you know, brewing that much beer actually looks like.
Yeah, because then your costs go up too, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can get efficiencies with some stuff, but yeah, we have to buy like, you know, semi-trucks of cans now, mm-hmm. Which we never had to do. We used to have to buy like a pallet or two. But now we have to buy like literally a semi-truck full. So stuff like that is challenging. But we've got a lot of good employees that we've hired up there. So we're excited about it.
I like the incremental growth. I have a business background. I have an MBA. And so I see a lot of breweries that try to grow too fast. And one comes to mind in San Francisco, Speakeasy Brewing. They try to grow way too fast. They miscalculated their projections, and then they ended up almost going under. Someone came and saved them. I forgot. It was some kind of capital investment fund.
Yeah.
It wasn't even they were interested in the brand, not the beer. And so that's kind of sad, but I'm glad you guys are taking it slow, seeing what you guys could do, and then just step it up. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, you know, for us, quality is most important, so we don't want to do anything that potentially sacrifices quality. And, you know, obviously even moving to this bigger system, it changes the way our beers are made and, mm-hmm. and taste. So we're just dialing that into, right. I think Spellbinder, it took us probably 5 or 6 batches to like, you know, finally get back to what we thought 24th Street Spellbinder tasted like. So, yeah, it's just kind of a learning process.
So is that how you guys talk at Renhouse behind the scenes when you talk about these, you call a Prescott in 24th Street?
Yeah. We have a million Slack channels that we, communicate on and yeah, it's either 24th Street or Prescott for sure.
Little behind the scenes there. I like that. Right. What's your favorite beer that you guys produce?
I mean, if we're talking daily go-to, it's, mm-hmm. it's Valley beer. I mean, I can drink Valley beer every day. And I drink it, you know, most every day.
Shift beer.
So I like beer. I like Valley beer a lot. You know, I don't know. I would say top favorite we've ever made was mm-hmm. probably the Helles that we did with Holy Mountain. I think that beer was fantastic. I'm super excited for this Czech Pilsner that we have coming out in a week or so. That's definitely one of my favorites. And then I think probably, you know, from like crazy, you know, specialty style that we do, I'm a big fan of Pie Thief. I'm a pumpkin beer guy, so I love Pie Thief.
I've had Pie Thief once. I can't remember if I liked it or not, to be honest. Do you guys add vanilla to your Pie Thief?
Some of the batches we have in the past.
Okay, because
most of the time we don't. It's normally just a big wheat wine base, and then we mm-hmm. add some pumpkin and spices to it. But yeah, 1 year we did a vanilla version. We've done like a coffee version. We've done all kinds.
I'm not saying you have to do it for me, but I really like pumpkin beers with a little bit touch of vanilla in it. That's just the it makes the
crowd pleasers.
Yeah, for me anyway. You know, my favorite Renhouse beer of all time is the Dankworth Galaxy.
Okay.
It was phenomenal. I fell in love with it. I'm glad I got a 4-pack because I enjoyed every single can, every single ounce of that beer. When are you going to bring that back?
we should bring it back. We've got all the galaxies now. I mean, with Dreamy Draw, we had to buy a shit ton of galaxy hops. So, we that could make a very near return, actually.
And you guys are doing a lot of the Wally now, but you guys really haven't done a Dankworth in a while, that I remember. When was the last Dankworth you guys did?
Well, we just did Dankworth with Tashmir recently. Okay. Last month or so, but yeah, we try to weave those in every now and then because I think people still like that sort of bigger double West Coast ish mm-hmm. kind of vibe. So we try to do like one a month kind of.
The hops. So when you buy the hops, I know there's some the hop growers in Arizona, right? Do you guys work with them?
So there are a few, some of the smaller guys that we buy from are like Billy Goat Hop Farms. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a ton of them. Most of the stuff we buy is through like BSG or, you know, Yakima.
Right.
And then, you know, if you want any kind of specialty one-off stuff, you need to buy it from New Zealand or somewhere. Sometimes you get it through BSG, but oftentimes kind of the sweet spot now is people try to find farmers and do it direct. But that's very, very hard to do.
Have you ever, tried getting wild hops? Have you heard of wild hops? This is something new I've heard of, just recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did, we've done some casks in the past mm-hmm. with wild hops. So, wild hops are super crazy. I mean, the flavor profiles are kind of all over the place.
Right.
So they could be really awesome or they could be super peppery or super green and vegetal, you know? So it kind of depends. You gotta be careful. It's definitely a test. And I think it's kind of like one of my favorite styles, which again is generally all over the place, is kind of like wet hopped beer. So literally mm-hmm. they don't try it at all. They just take it off the vine and they put it into like an IPA. You get a lot of the like fresh characters from the hops, but it could be like super tropical and super fruity, or you can go the total other way. You can be like super, you know, a vegetal or spice forward or whatever it is. So it's kind of like a Russian roulette sort of thing.
And that's something that you go and forage for yourselves, or you buy it from someone who forages it?
Yeah, you can buy wet hops during harvest season, and they'll like direct overnight to you. But yeah, so for the cask, I think Preston at one point had grown some in his backyard that we used. So yeah, it depends. I mean, you can find them if you look hard enough. You can find them everywhere.
So during the pandemic, Renthouse, the tap room was closed, even though some places were still open. And you guys are pretty strict. I wouldn't call it strict. Just you guys were really holding out till the CDC lifted some of its recommendations. Did that hurt you guys at all, or did it seem to make you more exclusive, to be honest?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the reason we did it was we have a super small tap room, and, mm-hmm. and you know, we were thinking about, you know, the safety of our staff, and then of course, right. You know, the safety of the public. Right? We felt like it was kind of irresponsible for us to be open and have big crowds in there and potentially contribute to, you know, spreading of like COVID. So once our staff was able to get vaccinated and you know, like you said, the CDC started like relaxing some of the guidelines, then we decided to open back up. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, ironically, it I don't know if it helped us, you know, on paper, but we basically pulled back the distribution. So, you know, a lot of restaurants were closed anyways, but mm-hmm. we stopped, you know, putting beer in kegs basically and put all of our beer in cans. So we were fortunate actually to grow last year during COVID.
Oh, wow.
We basically switch everything to online. So we came up with a website, basically, you know, online, you know, you could go buy beer, and then we introduced like a delivery service, hired a delivery driver, did all that, which was able to kind of keep us going through COVID. And we were fortunate we didn't have to fire anybody or lay anybody off during COVID, which was also, you know, really good. And we're super happy with it from like a, you know, business owner point of view.
Yeah, it kind of helps helps the loyalty, you know, amongst employees anyway, the feeling that you guys got their back.
Right.
And that's the way I see it. I remember one weekend I was like, you know, because I live out here in the West Valley. I live in a Surprise. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm gonna make a trek out there. I'm going to go down to the shop and get some beers. And then on the way back, I could stop at Renthouse and then, you know, come back. And so I went to the shop, and they weren't open, but they had like one of their doors, like a half door, a Dutch door open, and they were selling from right there. You know, people were social distancing and, you know, you wait your turn. And then I stopped by the Renthouse. I'm like, oh, there's nobody here. I'm like, All right. So then I walked in, and I think I surprised the hell out of whoever was working there that day. Like, oh, can we help you? We're not open. Oh, yeah, I just came here for some beer. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, then he went outside. He's really cool, very nice about it. I bought a 2-4 packs, and then I left. But it was, I kind of threw a monkey wrench in their day because they didn't expect me to walk right in the tap room.
Yeah, I wonder when it was, because we were pretty much open for to go for a while. I think there was a mm-hmm. there's a point where we were doing deliveries only, because we turned the whole tap room into basically like a delivery fulfillment center. So we had like all the tables were just covered with beers, and we were doing orders. We would do like at some points we would do like 100 orders a day. So we're like building boxes of orders to get out
and
deliver. So yeah, that was probably during one of those times.
It was fairly early. I didn't see any boxes or beer stacked up. And the guy who brought me outside said, oh, you know, we have to, you order online and we bring it out. He was really super cool about it.
Curbside.
Yeah, being that I barged in and everything. So, you know, but instead of having to go through the website, you know, he rung me out. He brought the tablet out and swiped my card and everything. So it was just a weird fucking time, man. The whole pandemic thing for everybody, right? Trying to figure it out.
Yeah, it sucked, and it's still going on. But like, yeah, it's crazy because like in my day job at Intel, it's super weird because I work with people in China and Taiwan and all over the place, and they're all at various stages. Like, you know, Europe is like locking down, and India is just crazy, and I mean it's all over the place. So I definitely feel for them because they're going through all the stuff that we've lived through for the last year.
Right.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But, yeah. But you're back. You guys are back. You guys are open. Are you guys doing social distancing or are you guys just open to capacity?
Yeah. So we removed some chairs and stuff. So there is a little bit of social distancing. But I think, you know, at this point, we still ask people to wear masks when they come in and walk around and order beer and that sort of thing. But I think, you know, like CDC guidelines again is, you know, if you have a vaccine, you don't need to wear a mask indoors or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then we just patio. So I think we got some space to kind of move around. So I think we're comfortable. Our staff's vaccinated. So, you know, again, I think the good thing with all of this is I think, you know, the public has become more aware of, you know, if they're not feeling good or they're feeling sick or they feel like they have a cold, that maybe they should, you know, not go out in public. I don't know in the past.
Yeah.
Like Americans, like if you have a little sniffle, you're like, yeah, whatever. I'm just, I got to go run some errands. I'm going to go out and, and do it. But I think maybe now people think twice about doing it or maybe wear a mask or wash their hands more or whatever. So I don't know. Yeah, we're open. We got some space to move around. We removed some chairs, but yeah, I think we're somewhat back to normal.
Oh, I gotta come out. I really love your space, and I haven't been out there in a while. I gotta come out soon.
Yeah, check out the patio. We got like 1,000 square foot patio in the backyard now. So.
Oh yeah, I've been in the back, but there was no patio there when I went back there.
Right. Yeah, it's a little more.
So it's right in between the brew house and the cold storage.
No, it's between the brewery and the tap room, so it's. Kind of right outside the tap room door, the patio. So we've got some picnic tables out there. We're getting some updated ones in the next week or so. We got some trees. We're installing some misters. So yeah.
It's oh wow.
Gonna be a nice little spot.
That's cool. Okay, so besides Ren House, what are some of the other breweries you like to go to in the area?
In Phoenix?
Yeah.
So I meet a colleague of mine at Intel quite a lot. So we go to Fade a lot just because we're, you know, usually eating and drinking. Pedal House is great. I go to Pedal House a lot. And I think probably, you know, I've been to Wilderness quite a few times, either the downtown spot or their Gilbert location. So that's pretty much as far as I get out. I don't get out that much. But those three spots, I'm a big, like, blogger geek, so
yeah, Pedal House, that'd be number one, right?
Yeah, Pedal House has some good stuff. Fate, I mean, Adam at Fate makes some great beers. I think people sleep on Fate, and I know Fate's got a tumultuous past.
Yeah.
And you know, they kind of had a falling out with the local community, but you know, Adam has been their brewer forever. He's still there. He makes some great beers. He's won some awards at GABF. I think they make some really solid beer.
All right. That's fair enough. I haven't been out there. It's so far out there. Last time I was there, I was talking with Rob.
Rob Fulmer.
Yeah. I stopped in to do a little interview with him. That was the last time I was out there. Because, you know, they're right there in the same complex.
Yeah, right.
Or
right,
next door, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Speaking of which... a lot of stuff has gone on social media in the past or in the past few weeks. And what's have you ever had an incident of sexism or should I say like sexual harassment at Ren House? And if so, how did you deal with it? Or do you guys have any type of policy or education that you do? Or
So we. Like I mentioned on like my personal page and stuff, we don't deal with or put up with any of that shit like at all. So like any sort of, I mean, we get shit all the time because we're, you know, woke or whatever. You know, people give a shit about being too PC or mm-hmm. or being where we're outspoken about, you know, during, you know, Black Lives Matter and making a Black Excellence beer, right? Akil was and still is one of the only Black brewers in the state. We have, you know, we support the LGBTQ community, right? So mm-hmm. we've done Silence and donated a bunch of money to those organizations. And what it's the same thing when it comes to sexism, right? It's we see each other as equals. There's no, you know, I think we have amazing female employees, and we always have, right? Hilda was a great part of the brewery that, you know, we wanted to move up into a management position, and she wanted to go do her own thing, which we were totally supportive of, right? And, you know, unfortunately, being in this community, or just having a bar, you run into, you know, dickheads and douchebags a lot. And generally, we have great customers, right? But we did recently, you know, even a week ago, have a really bad and poor interaction with mm-hmm. a customer, and with a female bartender. And I immediately found out who he was and wrote him a very stern and direct and told him that he wasn't welcome back, you know, in the brewery anymore, and that his actions were, you know, totally out of line.
Yeah.
You know, that person apologized and wanted to make it right. But, you know, we just got to always be aware of that and, you know, empower our staff to talk about it. And if they have a problem, to bring it up and we'll fix it. And we are having, you know, we're planning to have more inclusive sort of open forums with our staff where we come in and talk about problems or talk about how to fix things. So, yeah, I mean, we think about it a lot. And, you know, as an owner, we have a zero tolerance policy for any of that.
Yeah, because it's not just sexism. It's also, you know, like anti-gay remarks or racist remarks or jokes or even, you know, off the cuff or stuff that, oh, you know, it's no big deal. It's just a joke. It's still, and I think I mentioned it on my last podcast, like sometimes those things, just they stick with you and they just gnaw at you and you think about them like 5-10 years later. And it's just it's an uncomfortable place to, because like, why do you want to go back and work there if that shit is tolerated, you know?
Yeah, I know, and I totally agree, and that's why I mentioned, you know, it doesn't matter, it's gender, race, sexuality, mm-hmm. like all of those, like, you know, I don't know, it's a societal issue that we just need to, like, you know, just like address and like have a zero tolerance about it and hold people accountable and, you know, move on. So, you know, I don't know. I don't like being the woke brewery, and I hate the fact that a lot of people look at us and think we are, or we're doing it just to do it, or we're saying it just for attention or any of that bullshit. I mean, it's, you know, it's something that we believe in, so we do it. So anyways, off my soapbox.
I appreciate that, and the people who think that you're doing it just to do it, that's their problem, not yours,
right?
Yeah. So what's the future of Rent House? Like, are you guys gonna open a second, or like, are you gonna open a tap room at the production facility? I think that's a good question.
Yeah, so we were currently building out a patio up there.
Oh, nice. Prescott.
So we'll have a patio and probably move up that tap truck that we bought up there, so we can, you know, serve some pints mm-hmm. on the patio. I think bigger plans, we're definitely, you know, looking for another tap room somewhere, potentially East Valley or North Valley, somewhere like that. So we're actively looking on that. And then we're thinking about, you know, Prescott, and we have another acre to work with. So, you know, what does production look like over the next 5 years? So, you know, thinking about that as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. If you're you with your business background, you should know that you can't just, you can celebrate right now, but you have to, you know, five, at least a 5-year projection. Like, what do you guys want to grow to? Otherwise, like, what are you going to be, just the same brewery for the next 5 years?
Right. And that's kind of the challenges and the pitfalls of owning a small business is you can never relax, right? There's never, I think like when we won the GABF award, I think we relaxed for like an hour and celebrated for an hour. Okay. How are we going to make a bottle binder? And it was like constantly like, okay, what's next? What's next? You know, how to get better, how to grow the company. So yeah, I mean, we're constantly thinking about, you know, improving, I would say.
See, that's why I named you my favorite Arizona brewery a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you know the Hoppy Craftsman podcast, but I had Eddie Gomez, and he and I did our top six Arizona breweries, and Renhouse was number one on my list, just because of the Spellbinder Award. You guys just opened the production facility in Prescott. You guys are like, in my eyes, in my estimation, you guys are fucking red hot right now. And
what was Eddie's number?
Eddie's number one, I think it was Goldwater.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know, I can't blame him. He had, you know what? We went through our list, and before we got to number one, we did our honorable mentions, and then I forgot, and we moved on. We didn't even name our number one, so I had to do an amendment, and he didn't give me a reason, so I told everybody that he picked Goldwater because they were going to give him free beer.
Yeah, Goldwater makes some good stuff. So Sean was offered.
Right.
Good guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do enjoy their stuff. And when do you think, that reminds me, when do you think the Guild's going to have another brew fest or beer fest?
You know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, they're not going to do strong beer this year, which was normally in June, I think. I don't know. We want to do another lager fest, but it's still kind of weird just with big gatherings and stuff, but I don't know. So maybe towards the end of the year, there'll be another one. We'll see. Because I know the Guild relies or, you know, those events are important to the bottom line to pay for the Guild to go fight for legislation and stuff. So I would imagine the Guild wants to, you know, do an event as soon as possible.
I know for brewers, I don't know how you feel, but a lot of brewers I've talked to, the beer fests are a double-edged sword. You know, they're good and they're bad. But coming from a beer fan perspective, which is your favorite beer festival that Arizona used pre-COVID? What was your favorite beer festival? Which one?
Mm-hmm. So my favorite of all time, and this was right before we opened, was they did I think Real Wild and Woody down at the Tempe music, or like the arts and music building on the lake, on Tempe Town Lake.
Oh, wow.
And it was such a cool venue. Yeah. I mean, it was tight. There was a lot of people in there, but it was just like, you know, I think, you know, the place that you have the event at is just as important as like, you know, the beer and the food and all that stuff. So it was a really, really cool venue. I'd love for them to do it there again, but I think it was just too small from a, you know, economics point of view that you didn't really make any money because you couldn't sell enough tickets, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But that was definitely my favorite.
Oh, okay. Have you guys gone into any beer festivals outside of Arizona, like California or New Mexico or Colorado or anything?
We've poured at like Wake Fest a few times. Mm-hmm. In Florida, we did FOBAB, which is the Festival of Barrel-Aged Beers up in like Chicago. We've done some stuff in California, some like Hop Fest, and there was one with Modern Times that we did. I didn't go to those, but I think Wake Fest was crazy. I went to that with Bill, and it was just like, I've never been to Miami before, so it was just a cultural shock for me. It was super crazy. And then there was like, you know, a hurricane passing through in the middle of the festival.
Oh, yeah, no big deal.
But the beers were really good. But yeah, I think everybody's favorite is FOBAB that they've been to, because it's just like it's a cool setting. It's a cool environment. It's all like, you know, super cool experimental barrel age stuff.
You guys got to get into the Firestone Walker, man.
Yeah, I hear that's everybody's favorite.
Yeah, that was...
Invitational.
Yeah, I went 2 years ago. My hands down, my favorite beer festival I've ever been to. And then the last 2 years, I bought tickets. I was fortunate enough to get tickets again, but they postponed it twice already. So 2022, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah, that'd be a sweet one. That'd be a sweet. Yeah, we're trying to, you know, meet and greet and, you know, expand our network of fellow breweries. But yeah, I mean, one day we'll probably make it.
I had David Walker pour me a beer. Well, he was pouring everybody beers. Like when you walk in, he had pitchers and he would pour you there. I think they had a brown at the time.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a fun one. Well, man, yeah. Shit. I hope to see you at one of these festivals soon.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a concerted effort to get out more, and that's part of my COVID lockdown. Is as soon as stuff opened up, I want to like actually get out and like I don't know visit accounts and visit other breweries a lot more because I'm kind of a hermit.
nature. I think a lot of people are.
Right. Yeah.
Well, if I'm ever out in the I'm gonna hit you up and see if you want to join me for a pint at Ren House.
Yeah, let me know.
All right, thank you so much for taking time to come on and talk with me about beer. And I absolutely love Ren House, and I look forward to what you guys have in the future.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me.